Mini episode 608 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 608. It's your favorite pigskin talkers in all the world, Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, your FDH Lounge dignitaries, here to break it down for you for NFL Week 3 in the FDH Lounge. Last week, to quote the horrible character Becca from You're the Worst, very hashtag blessed, as yours truly went 12-4 on all the games. Of course, anytime I ever hit double digits, I can never sweep the board on my big three. There's always some a-hole team out there that's going to screw me, and 99 times out of 100, that's going to be the Rams. So I went only 2-1 on my big three, 1-0 on my lock pick for the year, 19-12. Verified, bitches! 19-12-1, that is, for the year on all my picks, 4-2 on my big three, 1-1 on my locks. You, Kyle, 3-3 last week, but still a profitable 7-5 for the season.
Yeah, and I feel I should have done better. When the week was all said and done, I was like, how did I only go 3-3 on the show? Because it feels like a lot of the teams I would have taken and didn't wound up covering. I mean, it was a great week, and you've probably read this, and anyone who's probably listening has heard it. It was a great week for the underdogs last week. Week one, by and large, except for Monday night, the Monday night doubleheader, went the way of the public and favorites. You know, usually if favorites have a good week, or the public has a good week, because the public usually likes to take favorites. Last week, the public lost it all back, and then some, as underdogs ran wild, brother, all throughout the day. I mean, that 4 o'clock window, that had to be pretty ugly in Vegas. When both the Raiders and the Jaguars went out right. Jaguars a nice winner for me. I had the Bucks too. But I fell for some mistakes last week, Ricky, which I normally don't do. Kansas City, what else can be said about that debacle?
And classic. Then, you know what, though? That's horrible luck on your part. That's Miracle at the Meadowlands Redux. That's the worst thing you can do under that circumstance. You either kneel or go for it. They went for Plan C, and that always bites you in the ass. That is not on you. That is squarely on Andy Reid.
Do you know what made it way worse, too, is, you know, I love following Twitter during these games. I'm fully ingrained in what they call I'm a two-screen guy during these games.
Yep, me too.
Especially if there's just one game on it. I'm paying attention to one game. Like, I feel I need a sensory overload when I'm consuming football.
Me too.
So I'm, you know, I'm following all the people on Twitter and stuff, and usually it's, you know, advanced stat guys and gambling guys that I tend to follow on there. And everybody on the gambling side was just, like, gripping the whole game. Please don't blow this for me, Andy Reid. And blow it he did. And then, you know, the other one that I had actually woke up, when you posted a link to the show, right away I commented on it. I kind of turned on the pick on second thought. That Tennessee, something I rarely do there. That was when I sided with the public, and the public really took a bath on that game. A Titans team that was prematurely, as I'm sure you would love to point out, back to the role of favoritism on the road, no less, and they forgot to show up
yep.
in Cleveland. So, new week,
yep.
and it is an ugly card, Rick Morris. It is an ugly card with so many underdogs playing well last week, winning outright. I'm not sure how to approach this card, but I do
it's
have
a tough card. It's such a big show, no doubt about it. But further irony, me taking the Browns over the Titans last week was sort of in reaction, if you will, to some things I picked up from you over a period of time about week one overreactions. We saw that with Tennessee and with the Browns, and it manifested. Kind of ironic that it went that way for you. Starting this week, the Thursday game here, We're going to have this up right around kickoff time. So this is going to, although again, all the FDH Lounge picks are always up on Twitter at the FDH Lounge for the Thursday night games, as well as whenever Kyle has a recommendation. 1-1 Redskins at the 0-2 Giants. 8:25 Eastern time Thursday night, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford. Nance Sims Wolfson on the call. Giants are spotting 3 in this one, and they have been up to 3.5 at one point. This is a game where, again, you've said off air, you're not a big fan of looking at the macro, whatever, but I can't see the Giants being 0-3, especially in a universe where the Redskins are 1-1. The Giants need this one. They haven't been horrible. They've just been horrible when it counted. They just have to learn to finish. They should be able to finish against the Skins here. I like the Giants laying the 3 at home.
Yeah, so do I. And, you know, I told you off air I only had 4 plays. I'm going to make it 5. I looked, you know, I got kind of ready for the show in that 1 minute we were apart, done talking. And I kind of liked the Giants all week. And then I've seen the numbers down to 3. So I'm not afraid of, like, kind of getting screwed where they win but don't cover. Because the Giants are due to start winning some close games, maybe more so than any team in football. Rick probably read that. By the way, that's Richard U. Morris. Thank you very much. But you probably read how they're the first team in league history to blow a double-digit lead in each of their first 2 games. This is kind of a carryover from last year, where I believe they were 0-4 in games decided by 7 points or less. So they're due to have some, quote-unquote, luck go their way in close games. The spread blown up now that I feel pretty good in recommending it. The Giants destroyed the Redskins last year on Thursday Night Football in D.C. And what do I always say about betting against Kirk Cousins off a win? I like doing that. I'm not a fan of his, as you know. I think the Giants' offense maybe gets it going here, and they get the check. I'll give that out as a recommendation. These Thursday games always screw me on the show when I give them out, but yeah. I'll try it again. So yeah, maybe
all right.
Tweet that one out. Yeah, tweet that one out. I apologize for making
I will
your
indeed.
Life much harder. I apologize for making your life harder.
No problem. No. I always tweet the FDH Lounge pick for the game as well as the Thursday night fantasy football recommendations. No problem to do that while I'm at it. Moving to the Sunday games here. It's a bloody battle in the AFC North. It's the 2-0 Bengals at the 0-2 Ravens, 1 o'clock Eastern time at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore. The team of Catalan, Tasker, Berline, and Dana Jacobson on the sidelines. My goodness, a sideline reporter who, if she wears heels, will tower over half of the players down there. That's an interesting touch. Yeah, Baltimore is laying 2.5 in this one, up from 1.5 initially. Again, I know it's a little dangerous to look at the macro here, but I don't know. Sometimes I get a gut feeling that's kind of unscientific. It reminds me, you remember last year, Baltimore came in, they were reeling off whatever the week one loss was. They played the Steelers. People were kind of on the Steelers, and the Ravens just kind of got it going here. The Bengals, to me, are overvalued at this point. The fact that the Ravens are not even laying the full 3 for being at home. This just has the feel of a game where the Ravens turn it around. The Ravens, to me, are undervalued and the Bengals are overvalued. Hence, I like Baltimore laying the 2.5.
The spot you spoke of from last year, in fact, the Ravens were off a loss to the Bengals in week one, if I do not...
That's right.
If I recall. So I think they were. I think they were. I want to
yes.
be with you so bad here, but the Ravens' offense has not looked good. And you know, Cincinnati, they're a team that I had regressing this year. So, again, I should really be with you here. I just, and the spread's so low, too. I'm chickening out, Rick Morris. There's a lot of plays I'm chickening out on this week. I would feel comfortable. There's a game here. I'm going to frustrate you and not play by your rule. There's another game on the card that I would throw into a teaser with this one. I would tease Baltimore to the underdog role, so they're now getting points. You know, you can do 6 points, 7 points, depending on how much juice you want to lay.
Yep.
And I'll get to that team later on. That's how I would play this. I'm just a little bit leery of laying points with Baltimore and Cincinnati because there's no doubt that Cincinnati has looked better through 2 weeks. But the Ravens, I mean, again, macro, as you pointed out, it is hard to imagine them going 0-3, particularly when you consider at least where I thought they'd be at the start of the season. So.
Right.
Well, more on the Ravens later.
No, I'm a proponent of teasers in the right situations.
Yeah.
I'll look forward to hearing what game That's going to be a battle in the NFC South Division, the 0-2 Saints at the 2-0 Panthers, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte. Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, and past lounge guest Jennifer Hale on the call here. We have a situation where the Saints are getting 3.5 on the road here. That's been pretty stable going through the course of time. This is a dangerous one for me because it's I can't make much of an affirmative case for the Saints, especially with Drew Brees being sore-armed at this point, and who knows to what extent that issue is going to be revealed as being at some point here. But the Panthers, to me, again, you talk about overvalued. Is there a, you know, you've laughed in past seasons when I proclaimed teams the worst 2-0 team in the history of sports. The Panthers, I will tell you this, even without Luke Kuechly, have a better defense than I thought they were going to have at this point. I'll grant you that. But, I mean, when you look at the totality of this team, I just don't see it. I see the Saints getting underneath the 3.5 points and covering that way. And, again, as we saw last week, the Jags, the Raiders, it happened to the Saints when the Bucs beat them. Ugly teams can steal a game. I think the Saints are an ugly team, but I like them getting the 3.5 here for reasons that I probably can't enunciate any better than that.
This is pretty fun. We just keep agreeing on everything here. I'm going to give this out as a recommendation. And like you, it's kind of difficult to make an actual case for the Saints, except to just say, well, it's just going to be one of those things.
Yep.
Drew, you know, the line has been also kind of, you know, some places have taken it down at times during the week because of the on-again, off-again status of Drew Brees. By the way, have you seen that Wrangler jeans commercial where he goes out with his wife to dinner? They show it 800 times. When they're laughing at the table, do you think he's telling her, oh, don't worry, honey, we cut another offensive lineman for this dinner?
That's how we're affording dinner tonight.
yes. Don't worry, I still got mine. I knew you'd love that because you hate Drew Brees.
That's awesome.
You hate him. Is he your most hated NFL player, Drew Brees?
Oh, not even close. But, I think he's very overrated as a team player because he's very Kobe-esque in that regard. F you, pay me. If that's your bottom line, you're not the ultimate team player.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is with or without him. I think the Saints are going to win. I don't think you could put a ton of stock into Carolina's 2-0 start. They've beaten Jacksonville and Houston, Jacksonville's obviously never good. And I think Houston might be really bad this year, to be honest with you. So I'm not putting a lot of stock. A division game, teams that start 0-2 ATS and are kind of like, and, you know, the public has kind of given up on them, that's usually a good spot to take a team. So
right.
I'm going to take New Orleans here as another recommendation. I think they'd maybe win the game outright, quite frankly. I mean, a game they have to have. And how the mighty have fallen. We're referring to the Saints as, quote, an ugly team in week 3?
Yeah.
Wow.
They are there. I've been saying it all along. I'm not a big proponent of the Saints this year. I think they're on a slide. And I think we are seeing it. Up next, two teams that have been we got two teams here that have been on a slide for a long time. It's the 1-1 Raiders at the 1-1 Browns. 1 o'clock at It Will Always Be Cleveland Browns Stadium to me in Cleveland on CBS. Carter Blackburn and Chris Sims on the call.
Oh,
it shows you what CBS thinks of this one. This is a game where the Browns are laying 3.5, had been 4.5 initially. So it's going to be Josh McCown instead of Johnny Manziel in the game here. You know, as I've been describing to all the overly excited locals here, one way or another, which shade of brown is your turd, basically? You know what I mean? Only in a town like Cleveland could people get that worked up about a choice between those two chodes. Having said that, again, I just go back to the macro, which is kind of what I was looking at last week with Tennessee. Those four Browns wins have got to come from somewhere. And if you can't beat the Raiders at home in what should be a letdown spot for them, traveling east, 1 o'clock game, you've beaten that into my head. I think the Browns have enough here to get over the hump. And probably a close game, probably a medium to lower scoring game, a field goal battle. But I like the Browns laying the 3.5.
Ooh, I'll tell you what, I think you're going to go back a week from now, listen to those last couple sentences you made, and regret taking Cleveland.
Really?
Lower scoring, close game. I would never bet the Browns as a favorite. This is going to be one of maybe two times all year they're favored.
Right.
I was, believe it or not, around 4.30, 35 o'clock. I don't know. You check the time stamp on your phone, Ricky, because you were the one I was talking to. I was all about to go on the Raiders this week when the Browns won. I was really not very impressed at all by their win last week. You know, they've died by turnovers in one game, lost, no surprise. And they lived by turnovers in the second game and, not surprisingly, won. I'm with you on Manziel, McCown. There are no winners there. For what it's worth, and you have to pick one, I would have actually stuck with Johnny Manziel. I think Josh McCown is.
Yes, I agree.
He's a known atrocity, whereas Manziel is more of an unknown atrocity. I think Josh McCown will never be good.
Right.
I don't.
That's my thinking
Johnny
exactly.
Manziel, yeah, Johnny Manziel, I'm pretty sure won't be good, but that's not 100% confirmed yet. So.
Well, and just shoot me now if we go into 2016 going, we still need to find out about Johnny Manziel one way or another.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I know Patton, I think, is probably scared for his job, which is why he's doing this.
Right.
And you talk about, you have the Browns winning four games. You know, I have them winning three. Ironically, I think this is the swing game for that, in that debate. You talk about stupid debates, whether the Browns are going to win three or four games. This is probably the game that determines it. So I probably actually should pick against them in this situation, but I'm not, because Oakland, you talk about the Eastern time zone thing, they're just awful on the road. They've lost 11 in a row on the road and 19 of their last 20. Yikes. Awful win, too. So
right.
Bringing this thing back full circle, as I was telling the people that story about texting you last week when we were going back and forth, I was all set to go on the Raiders, and then a funny thing happened after that. They beat Baltimore, and I think, it seems like the public's actually on the Raiders in this game. There's more people taking the Raiders than the Browns, and that's always kind of scary when, you know, there's more people taking the underdog. That's actually the one time when I kind of maybe look to stay away from the dog. So I'm punting on this one, Ricky.
Sure, it's the A game on Fox. It's the 2-0 Falcons at the 2-0 Cowboys. 1 o'clock Sunday Eastern Time, AT&T Stadium in Arlington on Fox. This is where you have Atlanta as a road, or they were a road favorite briefly here. It started as a pick'em, then they were laying two. Now it's back to a pick'em situation. And, again, I fully don't expect to agree on this one with you, but looking at this spot here again, and it's tough because, again, if Dallas had Romo and or Bryant, but particularly if they had Romo at this point, I would be on the Cowboys. And I will concede this. Again, as a Browns fan, I have seen the absolute worst of Brandon Weeden. I will concede to you that is a guy who can be slightly less horrific in a system with the right coaching. You saw where he came off the bench last week, went 7-for-7. That's obviously a huge anomaly. I'm not one of these people who is predicting that Dallas is going to reflexively lose every game until Romo comes back. I think that's silly. But I think this little roll that the Falcons have started the season on here, Dan Quinn has got this defense playing very, very opportunistic. I think the defense is going to rise up, make some plays, get a few turnovers in the right spots. Atlanta's going to squeak by with another one of their patented close wins over the NFC East. So I like Atlanta minus the 0 on the road.
Yeah, pardon me here. Oh, that was professional, wasn't there, Ricky? Oh, boy, there we go. I'm not going to disagree with you, actually. I can't make – I mean, it's funny – and we've already mentioned Carolina, and now we're on Dallas, and there's two other NFC teams that were in the playoffs last year that we'll get to in a little bit that common sense sort of dictated would regress. Now, I can't remember if you did, but I know I still had Dallas making the playoffs as a wild card.
I did not.
Okay, you did not. I still did, but... You know, the whole thing was, yeah, they lost to Marco Murray, but they still got that great offensive line, right? So they'll still be able to run the ball. Now they don't have DeMarco Murray, obviously. They don't have Dez Bryant. They don't have Tony Romo. I mean, I mean, that's insane to how much talent they've lost on that side of the ball. I mean, the offensive line can't really score points. I mean, they don't.
Right.
I mean, they can block for people, but somebody's got to do something with the ball. I can't make a case for Dallas here at all. If it didn't seem so obvious to take Atlanta, I probably would, but I'm punting. This is another one of those ones where I should just trust my guts and go with Atlanta, but I'm not going to do it.
Okay. Well, that approach has served you well over a period of time, so you're probably right on that. Up next, we've got the 1-1 Bucks at the 0-2 Texans. A real fugly game this looks to be. 1 o'clock Eastern time on Fox from NRG Stadium in Houston. Five-time Lounge guest Kenny Albert on the call with Daryl Moose Johnston and formerly the Golf Channel, the delicious Holly Saunders on the sidelines here. And this is a spot where Houston is, they are weighing 6.5, had been 3.5 initially. A lot of action's been going their way. I want to credit USA Today Sports Weekly for making a point here. And, of course, that's all, any week that I'm doing the show and I'm reading off the announcers, that's where I'm getting it from. For their keys to the game, they said something that stuck in my head. Their second key to the game is completion percentage and about how basically both teams have done worse when they're thus far this season at times when quarterbacks have had lower completion percentages, which is not too surprising. And they said, if you look at who you think is going to have the better completion percentage this week, that's who will probably win or at least cover in the game. Right now, as much as I haven't given up on Ryan Mallett, I think Winston is going to have a better completion percentage, particularly. And again, the weapons are fairly comparable, but I think Winston, even at this stage, is somebody I'd take over Mallett. Hence, I think they'll get within the 6.5, and I'm going to credit them for that point, which I think is a good one.
Isn't this kind of a one of your patented why ask why? So,
for Houston to be laying 6.5, though, it's close.
Yeah,
You're absolutely right that it's close.
I was kind of shocked, to be honest.
Me too. It's one of the bigger spreads of the week.
Because they're not good, Ricky, at all, the Texans. You know, I said a lot of things on the show, some of them dumb, a few of them smart, and in the latter category would be me reaffirming my lack of faith in Ryan Mallett last week. I just don't like him. I don't think he is a viable NFL starter. I think if he was, he would have already gotten a chance. I think he's like this golden goose that coaches all think that they can do something with because he's got a big arm and he's got all these traits. I've never seen Ryan Mallett play well in an NFL game, quite frankly.
He did against the Browns last year.
Well, I mean, who was it against?
The Browns.
Who was it against?
I know.
I don't even think he did, though, really. I mean, did he? I mean, I'll check. I'm just not sold on Ryan Mallett. That said, I'm punting here as well, as I continue to be a really horrible guest here on week three. The reason being, I love Tampa Bay next week. They're going to be back at home against Carolina. I'm hoping they're a dog there. It's dangerous getting into those macro-level betting strategies, but, Tampa was kind to me last week. They were a winner. I think they're going to be kind to me next week. I'm not going to go Tampa Bay 3 weeks in a row.
That's probably a good strategy. Up next, it's the Chuck Muncy Bowl and maybe a Dark Horse Super Bowl preview. The 1-1 Chargers at the 1-1 Vikings.
Oh,
1 o'clock Eastern time on CBS, TCF Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. Ian Eagle, Dan Fouts, Evan Washburn on the call for CBS. In this spot, Minnesota is laying 2.5, up from 1.5 initially. This is one of the tougher ones of the week for me to call.
Yeah.
By the way, when these teams played 8 years ago, Adrian Peterson famously going off for 296 yards. When good old Mr. Know-It-All, Matthew Berry, told fantasy owners to bench him that week because the matchup. Oops! So I'm obligated to bring that up every time these teams play again here. But I'm deferring to Minnesota just because they're at home and because Super Bowl teams can start the season 1-2. So the macro is not going to scare me off of this. Yeah, I'm going to be on Minnesota in a tough matchup. With the Chargers' offensive line being kind of hit and miss right now, that front of the Vikings, not exactly Purple People Eaters redux, but I think the matchups probably in the trenches probably narrowly are on the side of the Vikings, plus they're at home. I'll take them laying not even a field goal.
I'm not wowing your pick of the Vikings. I'm wowing the fact that you're putting them on that Super Bowl level. Like, what am I missing with this team? Like,
that was pretty good last year.
Yeah, against a horrible Detroit team. A Detroit team that I thought would regress and looks to be even worse than I thought they would be this year. I'm not sold. This, I agree with you 172% on this one. This is the hardest game to call on the week. The line is perfect. I think San Diego is the better team, and the line reflects that. So
right.
I don't like short road. I don't, you know, like road dogs under a field goal. So I'm punting here as well. I think both of the, you like these two teams a lot more than I do. I think they're both kind of average.
Okay.
So I was gonna defer to you on this one. I just cannot believe you.
All right.
So there's another one of your teams that you were high on that I wasn't, that I'll concede to you in a little bit here. But it ain't the
Vikings.
Right. I mean, they're average, man. Average team.
Well, up next is a classic spot that I know you love to play. It's the 1-1 Jags at the 2-0 Patriots, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, CBS Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon on the call for CBS. And again, I know you love those double-digit dogs here. This is a spot where New England is laying 13.5 here, not even the full 14 where it was initially. I look at this, and again, for as much as I think people have been prematurely slotting in Blake Bortles as a punchline coming into this season, we've seen some moments where he has really looked pretty good. Again, with weapons that I still kind of find questionable across that offense, and the wide receivers, not so much the running game. I look at this, and it looks like a classic situation to me. I said coming into the season, my biggest question about the Patriots was going to be that secondary. And through 2 weeks, they haven't really proven me wrong, but it hasn't really mattered at this point yet. To think that they are going to stomp Jacksonville so convincingly that the Jags can't get a back door, I don't see it. Give me the Jags getting the 13.5.
I like that you did that, but I'm gonna wuss out a little bit here because Jacksonville's off the win. So I would be with you if I was forced to give a recommendation on every game, but you know, guess what? I make my own rules on this program, and I'm not gonna do that. So the Jags are just like the Raiders to me this week. Because they won last week, I'm just less inclined to go with them. I feel that, you know, especially just under two touchdowns, that half point,
right,
you laugh, could be a big deal. New England, I mean, make no mistake about it, it's just a way, way better team than Jacksonville. I mean, this is one of the biggest mismatches that you have in the league. So.
Well, exactly. So we're halfway through the slate here. We now go to the second half of the slate. The 1-1 Steelers at the 1-1 Rams. 1 o'clock Eastern Time on CBS at the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis. Gumbel Green Erdahl on the call for CBS. This is one where it's at this point a pick'em, and the Steelers had been laying 1.5, had been laying 1. I look at this one. The Steelers are getting back Le'Veon Bell, who's going to be set to go. The offense has been pretty doggone good, even without him to this point. The Rams screw me either way. So if I pick them to win, they'll lose, and vice versa. I'm on the Steelers here on the road. They came through for me with the lock of the pick last week here. Not even having to lay any points against the team that I think at this point, clearly they're better than, if for no other reason than that offense. Give me Pittsburgh laying 0 on the road.
Yeah, you made a hell of a point last week when you talked about, and we were both on, Pittsburgh was one that we shared a recommendation on last week. You know, that was your lock, and it was one of my recommendations. That's when those line up, those do pretty well. But you had a great point. We said when the Steelers get ahead of the Niners, it's pretty much over. And sure enough, Pittsburgh was the first team I put a check mark next to in that 1 o'clock window that we're going to win. I had that one was over pretty early. Go back to the earlier in the program, I talked about that teaser. With the rate, you know, if you tease the Ravens to the underdog role, you could pair them with something. I'm going to say pair them with the Rams.
You know, okay.
Tease the Rams up to +7, and then the Ravens would be +4.5, I suppose, if my math's correct, it's 2.5. And I think that's a solid tease you could do here. The public loves the Steelers in this game. And, you know, you talk about the return of Bell, so it's easy to see why. The Rams are a team I swear to God, in 4 years of doing this with you or however long it's been, I never give out a recommendation on one of their games usually because they're so hard to figure out. I mean, that old Rams pattern held true again, beat the Seahawks, lose to the Redskins. But I think they could stay within a touchdown of the Steelers at home. So I would tease them here.
All right. Interesting play here. Going to the rest of the slate, the 1-1 Niners at the 2-0 Cardinals, 4:05 Eastern time,
University
of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale on Fox. Brenneman Davis Siragusa on the call. This is one where Arizona is laying 6 to the 49ers. You say not to make any picks generally or that you don't think it's wise because of macro factors. Look, I'm looking at this here. I don't have a lot of dogs this week. I'm pretty much convinced, and it's dangerous to take somebody when you know they can't win a game. The 49ers will not win a game. I'm almost going to swear that in blood. They're not going to win this game. I like them to take the 6 because I don't have enough dogs. And I can't say that they won't, you know, backdoor this thing and screw everybody. So, yeah, an undeserving 49ers team squeaks by as they did in week one.
And here it was. I was going to come on the program and say nice things about Bruce Arians and your Arizona Cardinals. But I guess we don't have enough time, do we, Ricky? So maybe some other week. Oh, that's just too bad. If this line was 7, I would be more inclined to take San Francisco. If it climbs over 7 on game day, folks, hop on the Niners. Ricky's right.
But that's probably a good call.
Until it gets to 7 or higher, I'm a little leery.
All right. Next up is my 1A team, the 1-1 Dolphins. They're hosting the 1-1 Buffalo Bills, 4:25 Eastern Time, Sun Life Stadium, Miami Gardens, Florida on CBS. Spiro Dedis and Solomon Wilcox on the call for this one on CBS. This is a game where Miami's been laying a pretty steady 2.5 points the entire week here. I look at this again. It just comes down to matchups for me. Miami has struggled with the running game so far. The Bills are not a team you're going to reestablish it against. And I think that Miami has been kind of lucky with whatever success they've had in the passing game in the absence of a running game. I think that luck's about to run out. A Miami team that a lot of people thought was going to start the season very strong because of a poor schedule, it looked like. I see them going to 1-2. I'll take Buffalo outright, never mind the 2.5.
Wow, I'm going to completely disagree. Miami's a recommendation for me this week. This line is obviously saying that the odds makers feel Buffalo is just a hair better than Miami. I don't agree with that at all. I'm going to stick with the macro here, the dangerous play, as we said ad nauseum throughout this program, but I'm going to stick with it. You know, I know Miami's been a little disappointing, but, you know, and given the level of competition, I'm sure Dolphins fans wish they were 2-0. But, I mean, they did split a couple of road games nonetheless. At home, I think Buffalo's in letdown mode after taking on after that Patriots game, which they were treating like it was the AFC Championship. I think they're right to actually get blown out here. Tannehill figures it out. I think Ryan Tannehill figures it out against the Bills defense. That was nothing close to what it was in week one last week. So I like Miami here.
Absolutely. That's true. They got some early stops on New England, but it was all over after that point. Up next, a couple of teams that combined 0-4. Who would have seen this coming? At least with Seattle being part of the mix, the 0-2 Bears at the 0-2 Seahawks, 4:25 Eastern Time, CenturyLink Field in Seattle on CBS. Nance Sims and Wolfson, the CBS A-team on the call
again.
Here.
Nance and Sims.
They're calling
They're worse this year.
Yeah.
I only listened to the Thursday night game. That was miserable. They're worse.
Yeah, it's hard to sit through at times. Seattle is laying 14.5 in this one, so you even got the hook. But it's Jimmy Clausen on the other side. And again, I know you always say never take the home or road favorite laying it to this degree. Cam Chancellor's coming back. It just feels like the perfect storm here. If there was ever going to be a 59-0 game this year, this feels like it. Give me the Seahawks, never mind the 14.5.
Yeah, I would never bet a double-digit favorite in this league. The margin for error is just too slim, but my God, does this look like a horrible matchup for Chicago. That game was close. That was a game I lost last week against Arizona. Honestly, didn't feel too good when kickoff rolled around, especially when Arizona returned the opening kick for a touchdown. But Chicago was able to stay with Arizona largely through the first half. That wasn't until Cutler went down. Jimmy Clausen was awful. And you're right, the Seattle secondary now back to full strength. Oh boy, this is the Bears. Is John Fox doing an Eric Mangini memorial? I can't win with these guys thing. Is that what we're gonna hear pretty soon? Because it's looking bad in the Windy City, man.
Could be. Could very well be. And I'll tell you what, too. I talk about sometimes on the show players that are force multipliers. They use that military term. We saw it in his absence the first 2 weeks, as we've seen it with his presence the last couple of years. Cam Chancellor is one of the most valuable players in this National Football League, kids. No question about it. Having him back is going to make all the difference in the world. So that is that's a big thing in Seattle's favor, obviously. Skipping to the Monday nighter, because we've got the big three yet to come, and one of them's the Sunday night game. But skipping to the Monday nighter, it is the rematch, the long-awaited rematch of Super Bowl I, the 1-1 Chiefs at the 2-0 Packers. Chiefs out for revenge here at Lambeau Field in Green Bay on ESPN, 8:30 Eastern time Monday night. Tirico Gruden Salters on the call. This is one where Green Bay is laying 7 points, up from 6.5 initially. This is in a tough week. I'm going, it seems like, more on gut when I'm looking at these games and how they fit into the picture of the season than I usually do, and maybe more than I should. But as great as Aaron Rodgers has looked at this point this year, there's going to be some games where he stubs his toe. There's going to be some games where he doesn't quite look as sensational, and indeed they will lose a few of them. I don't think they're going to lose this one. But I like the Chiefs because, again, you look at the havoc that they can wreck defensively. Not just the sack guys up front like Houston, but, you know, in the trenches. Kansas City's physical style of football, it just strikes me, this is a little bit tougher of a matchup. They're going to try and mud up this game with their defense a little bit, and I think they're going to succeed. I don't see the Packer offense being at its peak form on Monday night here. I just think they're going to have a handful of games like this during the course of the season. This will be one of them. They may lose. I don't think they will, but give me Kansas City in the 7. I think they can hang.
Love it, Ricky. This is a recommendation from you, Kansas City. As much as they screwed me last week, and there's, you know, some people say, oh, is there going to be a hangover? That's a tough one to get over. I actually like the situation because they're going Thursday to Monday.
Yeah, practically a bye.
So, that's plenty of time to prepare. Green Bay, they're the ones who the situation, they're the ones who I think could suffer a letdown off the win over Seattle, a game you know they've been pointing to all offseason. And it's interesting, there's been people who have written about this. In years past, it always used to be teams would struggle the week after playing Pittsburgh, you know, when Pittsburgh was kind of tough.
I see it working. You know, I love it.
Yeah. That sort of now applies to Seattle. Last year, teams were awful the week after playing the Seahawks. I think the Packers suffer a major letdown. Remember, I thought that, despite the fact I picked them in the Super Bowl this year, I said that they would have a worse record than most would project in the regular season. I also could see a possible toe stub here. They're dropping like flies in the green and gold, too, man. Down Belaga, that's not good when going against the Kansas City pass rush.
Right. Right. That's definitely the case. It could be Starks in for Lacy at running back, which is a drop-off. I agree with you. The Kansas City, again, they can be a physical team in the trenches coming off of a physical team in Seattle. I see you working there. That's a great point. I love it. We're both on Kansas City, but you with a recommendation. We come now to my big three. We start off here Sunday night. It's the 2-0 Broncos at the 0-2 Lions. 8:30 Eastern time, Ford Field in Detroit on NBC. Collinsworth, Michaels, Tafoya on the call here. Denver, a relatively short road favorite here, weighing 3. It had been 2.5, been 3.5, but it's settled right there at about a field goal. You talked about it before. The Lions have been awful. And I'll tell you what, again, the Broncos, again, defensively, they're looking like a juggernaut this year. I mean, there were some drives last week that Kansas City had that were the exception to that rule. But defensively, the Broncos are coming along very, very nicely. I think the offensive woes have kind of been overstated. They were playing Baltimore week one. And, again, Peyton Manning's still adjusting to a new offense. But we saw in the second half last week, Peyton Manning's not completely done yet. No question about it. I like Denver laying the 3 here. My only qualm is it seems too easy. And I know you think it's dangerous when it seems too easy, especially with a road favorite here. But road favorite Ricky, is recommending Denver as one of the big three.
I don't hate it, Ricky. I don't hate it. I'm going to tell you why. I also thought that people were writing off Peyton Manning way too quick last week. When he had that pick six early and the Chiefs went up 14-0, I mean, there were people on Twitter, and like not like fans, not like, you know, like not like, you know, Kansas City Kyle or whatever, but I mean, like, people who were paid to write about football saying Peyton Manning needs to just retire right now. And
right.
I blame them for cursing the Chiefs. Quite frankly, that was, you know, I think it was, you know, I don't want to guess who it was because then I'm wrong and then that sounds bad. So I can't, it was a couple, so I can't remember. But if you were a guy in the second quarter, there was a guy on there who's like, it's over, Peyton, just retire.
Right.
That's a bad take. Detroit looks terrible and they have to go to Seattle next week, by the way. Uh-oh.
Right.
Their season's not looking too good. I'm going to pass,
right.
But I do not
right.
like the home dog in this situation.
Gotcha. All right, the rest of the big two in our 4 minutes remaining here, it's the 2-0 Jets hosting the 0-2 Eagles. It's the Battle of Green in the NFL, 1 o'clock Sunday Eastern Time, MetLife Stadium, East Rutherford, New Jersey, on Fox. Burkhart Oliver and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call for Fox. This is a game where the Jets are laying 1.5, had been 1, had been 2.5. It has settled in that range right there. Just a horrible, if you just look at the X's and O's here, as much as the Eagles are being pushed around in the trenches, people have made the jokes about $22 million worth of running backs running behind $1.1 million in guards. That's been their problem. This Eagles roster, we said at the beginning of the year, more variance possibly than any team in the NFC. Looks like bad variance. Anytime we say that, it's always on the bad side. It's going to be a long year. Jets keep it going. I like the Jets laying to the 1.5.
I got to save you some time for your lock, but I'm going to disagree respectfully here, and I'm going to recommend the Eagles.
Gotcha.
Everyone's killing them. Everyone's killing them, and all the X's and O's stuff you kind of just briefly went through is completely correct. But the Jets are off a big, unexpected national TV win. This is just the time where they're ripe for a letdown. Also, this is the third time this year we have seen a change in role of favoritism, believe it or not. The advanced line had the Eagles favored in this game.
That's right.
The other two occasions were Vikings against the Niners in week one. We saw what happened to the Vikings. Last week, Titans against the Browns. We saw what happened to the Titans. The Eagles cannot possibly be this bad. I'm going to take them.
Very interesting. All right, so we disagree on that one. We come to my 1,000-star gold plate of the Lock of the Millennium 4, NFL Week 3. I'm 1-1 on my Locks of the Millennium thus far this season. It's the 0-2 Colts at the 1-1 Titans. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Nissan Stadium in Nashville on CBS. McCarthy and Archuleta have the call. This is a game where the Colts are laying 3. It had been 3.5 initially. I cannot see a universe where the Colts, as bad as they've started, are 0-3. We saw last week that the Titans were overly built up at this point here. I think it's going to be a snapback game for Indianapolis. Again, there's a lot of people, possibly yourself included, that might say, like my Sunday night pick, it looks too easy. That's dangerous, Ricky. I don't care. I'm on the Colts to bounce back, make it 1-2.
I was all ready to go on the Titans this week. I, to be honest with you, I don't like your pick at all. I'll be very blunt with you. I'm going to tell you why. The Titans were the worst spread team in the league last year. The Colts were the best. A little regression is going to get you, just like instant karma, but it seems like it may have gotten the Colts a little bit already more than expected. I would not have anticipated them losing to both the Bills and the Jets. I don't know, man. The Colts look really bad. I don't like that pick, and I really wish that the Colts had won Monday night, because then I'd be on the Titans, but the Colts lost Monday night, and they are desperate, so... I'm kind of with you. I don't see – I mean, if they're 0-3, uh-oh. Although that front office situation is getting messy, so who knows. But
That's true. It's
yeah,
getting bad.
I'm chickening out. I'd love to go against you here too, but I'm not going to.
Very interesting. All right, so you like the teaser of St. Louis and Baltimore, you said, right?
Yep.
That's who you like? Okay, you like Miami, you like Kansas City, New Orleans, and Philadelphia. Of course, my big three for the week. the Jets, Denver, and the Colts as my lock.
And don't forget about the Giants. Don't forget about the Giants as well.
For Thursday night. Yes. Good point. Glad you reminded me. So, again, another fun week, Kyle. Looking forward to week 4 with you next week. Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 608.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.